Hello, friends. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate, and I'm so glad you're here because today we're going to look at a really interesting space in real estate, which is the giant buildings in Manhattan and other really large city places. We're going to speak with Tina Larson, who looks at the numbers on buildings that have doormen and things that we don't usually see here in Concord. So I enjoyed the conversation. I hope that you will too. So dial in and I'll see you on the other side. You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell my audience a little bit about Tina. Tell us where you're located. Where is this amazing freshly painted apartment? And what do you do in and around real estate? Give us a little bit of history.
Okay. So I am Tina Larson, and I am the co-founder and owner of the Folsom Group. We are business consultants for apartment building owners and boards. So we work on helping property managers or property owners or co-op and condo boards increase their property value. And the way that we do that is that we reduce their expenses. The expenses we then reuse in the building to upgrade amenities, install amenities in many cases, and that ultimately eventually increases property values.
So you're in one of the most painful parts of real estate when you're trying to deal with residents and probably occasionally tenants and owners and trying to help them work together for the best interest of a building. And there's always somebody who their retirement busybody job is babysitting the association management and babysitting the co-op board, and they can be the biggest headache on the planet. But we all know that without a really good functioning board and a really good functioning management team, a property can go all to hell for and hard to come back from. And then you mentioned the finances too. We've seen embezzlement happen in associations, and we've seen people take the money and run when there's a need for capital improvements. And by the way, listeners and viewers, if you've only ever lived in like a normal house in a normal subdivision, you will have no idea what we're talking about here because it really is a different space. And the HOA situation with a building is entirely different than the HOA for a neighborhood. Although to be fair, what they both have in common is the busybody neighbors who just can't wait to serve on that board and boss their neighbors around. So Tina, I'm so curious. How did you wind up in this specific space? Was it a bad experience you had and you said, I got to do this better?
Yes and no. So, so it was completely by accident. So myself and my husband, who is also my business partner, we come from a long, long experience for decades in the finance industry. I've been a business analyst analyzing companies for the sole purpose of investing my clients' money. During the financial crisis, we got another maintenance increase, a letter from our board saying that they were increasing the maintenance for 5% again for the 10th year in a row. This is during a time where there's a financial crisis, there's no inflation, and there's no reason for another 5% increase. If you have any kind of common sense and understand how businesses work, that should not be the case.
And how sad that we now look back on the good old days of the recession when we did not have runaway inflation.
Yes.
But actually, let's talk about that 5% real briefly, because I can hear the question come into the chat now of, but how can they do that? And Tina, maybe you can answer to this, but I've seen it in almost every association document I've ever looked at, whether it is in a building, a condo board, a co-op board. They build in an amount that the board itself can increase without a vote from the residents. Is that how you got that 5% hitting every single year?
Yes. And in our experience, what happened is that the property manager suggests a board. And then they send that to the board, and then the board, they have a job. They have a full-time job. They have a family. They have hobbies. They're not, most of them are not specialists in running a building, so they rely on the property manager. The property manager, if they have 100 buildings, they're not going to sit there and say, you know what, for our building number one, we actually remember that last year they did all of this LED upgrades, so we should not increase their electricity charges by X percent. They take their 100 buildings and they apply 5% everywhere. And it's not customized to the building, but the board doesn't know, so they rely on the property manager. So it's a little tricky, and it's probably not intentionally, but that's just what happens. So 5%, we see one property manager doing 5% for all of their buildings across the board, and the next one doing 8% for all of their buildings. And that's how we came to this conclusion, which is insanity.
Which is, we'll just say they're trying to be efficient, but as a result, they're not personalizing the experience, which is why, friends, if you live in one of these buildings, these are the documents you have to investigate before you buy the property. And in fact, it doesn't matter if you're in a suburban neighborhood, if you've got a homeowners association and documents, you need to read it and find out how much your dues can go up based on the property management's recommendation of this many people on a board, because there's a lot of things that can happen on your behalf. And sometimes it's malfeasance, and sometimes it's efficiency, and sometimes they just don't really care because they figure they'll just do what's most efficient for them. And so I'd love to know, Tina, so in this particular space, you know, the show is crazy shit in real estate. I feel fairly confident that you've encountered some hairy scenario that you said, this cannot be happening, besides a 5% increase every year for 10 years in a row, because that would make my blood pressure go up. But in addition to that, what have you seen that people would be so surprised to find out about?
So in one case, I have a long list, but in one case.
You are in management, so that happens.
Yes. We had a building that we thought that there would be malfeasance, but there were not. Okay. But the property manager had not charged for extra services. So the storage bins were not being charged for decades. And there was, in the building, there was an agreed upon sublet fee. Whenever you subletted, there was a percent, I can't remember what it was. I believe that it was 15% or so of the monthly charges. And all of these fees, they added up, and we were able to locate all of them. And they charged them, and they actually went back, and every single resident actually paid, even if it was years and years and years ago, $160,000.
Oh my gosh. So what happens if you're a resident and you get that bill? Did they, oh my gosh, is there not a statute of limitations on when they should have been charging it? That's crazy.
And we did actually not expect them to pay all the way, but they all did. Some of them, they called the property manager and asked if they could be like on a payment plan. So they paid over a period of time, but all of them, I guess, if you have a storage bin and you are aware that you're going to be charged $60 a month, and then all of a sudden you're not charged, I guess you let it ride and you're not going to complain about it. But when you get the bill, even if it's a little later, I would assume that you feel like, yeah, you know, it's, I should have paid it.
So they knew about these charges and they weren't even getting away with it. And then they just got hit with it and paid it anyway. Well, that's kind of a surprising outcome. I'm not going to lie. I kind of figured people would pitch a fit and fight about that, because I'd probably want to fight myself. But gosh, that's a lot of money.
Yes. But it was among a lot of residents. So it was, yes. So yeah, it was close to 50 residents. So it was not like one person got a bill of $160,000. They got
The warning shot to all of you who are watching and listening is, if you know you have dues you should be paying, you maybe want to find out about it so you don't wind up getting hit all at one time when the management oversight changes. Holy smokes. So how about in co-op buildings? What kind of things do you see in co-op situations? I know that those boards are generally fairly exempt from the protected classes and fair housing because they're selecting a neighbor, which to me just seems kind of wild and crazy that they can pick and choose like that. How is it that co-op boards can select when the rest of the world is supposed to have fair and equal opportunity? I don't understand.
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it can go both ways. I mean, it's a private organization. So if you have a membership club of some sort, let's say that you have a tennis club and you only want tennis players, then you wouldn't accept anyone who is not a tennis player, or maybe you would. But so it's kind of similar. But I mean, it's a private club and they set their own rules. But what we're seeing more and more, not for so that board doesn't get in trouble because they're required to abide to state laws. They can't discriminate, right? And it's the right thing to do. They very often they have a written policy of this is who we accept and this is who we don't accept. And then as long as they stick to those rules, they shouldn't get in trouble. And I mean, most cases that we see, it's really based on their financial situation.
Gotcha.
So it's not any other area. It's can they afford it? And are they going to be responsible tenants?
Hey, y'all. Just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. It's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. Each of you has different goals. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content.
So in the time that you've been doing this, do you feel like co-op boards are starting to go away and they're being replaced with a more traditional managed approach, or are they the same as they've always been?
They're the same as always. So they are offering documents, which in New York City, most buildings that were converted in the 80s, there was a big conversion boom. And then the condos have either are new built or have been built since then. But during the 80s, there were a lot of co-ops. So whatever structure it was as part of the bylaws and their offering documents, that's what they have to have. Well, I mean, they could change that, but that's complicated. I mean, if you buy into a building and it states in the offering documents that you're buying into a minimum of 5-unit board member situation and a 24-hour-a-day doorman, then to change that, it's very difficult because you're going to get 200 people screaming because that's what they bought into, right?
And nobody wants that. That's the worst part of any management job is the people who have their own opinions. Okay, so I'm curious, since you are operating in an entirely different space than a lot of my viewers and listeners are, they probably are very intrigued by this. So when you're managing a building with many units in it, do you think the doorman buildings are better or the non-doorman buildings are better in today's environment?
Well, I personally think that a doorman could be replaced by virtual doorman.
What's a virtual doorman?
That's when you have the intercom and you call people up and then you see them on your phone and you can let them in or not let them in if you don't like them, or you can phone screen them or however you want to do it. I think that a lot of buildings could probably, especially overnight, when there's almost no foot traffic, replace a doorman. In New York City, there are unions, so most buildings are union. The staff is their unions, so they can't replace them, but they can't eliminate any positions because it's union, and the union is very strong.
I didn't know they were a union, but it makes sense considering New York. Now, how have they managed that with the labor shortage that's happening? And of course, we're recording this in the first quarter of 22, where the labor shortage is all over the country. So how do the unions flex with that when there's maybe nobody to fill the slot?
They have been working, all the staff, building staff, they've been working throughout the pandemic and there's no change. One of our clients in New Jersey, actually, they had their handyman quit and we had a little bit of trouble finding a new one, but we did find one. And just to go back a little bit about your question before, we're not the property manager. The buildings, they still have a property manager who deals with the day-to-day.
Oh, in addition to what you're managing with the association management.
Yeah, so they take care of the books and the complaints. We do not deal with books and complaints. We analyze their expenses, and their repair projects, the cost of their repair projects, and then we reduce how much they're paying for those.
So really, you're just on the outside of the drama, looking at it and laughing at it, and then figuring out how it affects the numbers.
That's correct. That's exactly.
Oh, so you've got the easiest side of the whole thing.
We think so.
All right. So before I let you go here, what in the financial world, if somebody is looking to buy into a building that is managed, has an association, and they ask to see the numbers, they want to see the P&L and look at the books, what line items should the outsider be looking at to get a feel for how healthy the organization is?
That's a good question. Well, they have to have a little bit of cash on hand. And you, as a real estate agent, have the number of, is that four months of expenses, or is it 6 months? And it might vary in your neck of the woods versus New York City. New York is typically 3 to 6 months, so that they don't run out of cash. And then we take a very common sense approach. So if it's an apartment building, no matter if it's in Charlotte or New York City, if it's in an apartment building and you walk in the door and you go down to the basement and the lights are on 24/7, then they're wasting electricity. That's the quickest and easiest. If the hallways or the corridors are lit 24/7, then they're wasting money. Another one is go up to the roof. If the roof is not used, they're wasting valuable property. There should be a garden and it should be used. It's as valuable property as the rest of the building.
So when you've seen that rooftop turned into a garden, is that something the residents are doing? Is that something that you lease out to a local restaurant? What are the ways people do that? It's a brilliant way to think about it. It's got good sunshine there.
Yes, and maybe even for solar. That's especially true. In Charlotte.
Exactly. A little more so than in New York.
But in New York, it's feasible too. New York, very often, the height limits so there's so many units. They need so much electricity and the area is so small that they don't have enough room to put sufficient solar to make up for all the electricity that they need. But it's still worth it.
It could be supplemental, right?
Yes. So we install it in one building where it supplements approximately 25% of the total electricity use for the building. So it's not enough because it's 20 stories tall. If it's a building that's much widespreader with a larger roof, that's maybe like 4 to 6 floors or stories, then it can potentially offset all the electricity needs in the building.
Which honestly, that's probably the best way to look at renewable energy, not as a complete replacement for what we have, but as a supplement so that you can start creating some hybrid solutions at lower cost and lower usage of fuels and makes it a win for everybody. So I love that concept. And there you go, friends. Now you've got some good insider information to look at if the lights are on 24/7 or if they look like the grocery store where the case turns on as you're walking down the aisle, because I love those smart lights. And look at the rooftop, in addition to always paying attention to how the numbers work and who is running those. Tina, if somebody is curious about how your organization looks at numbers and how they can reach out to you about the places where they work, how can they find you?
So they can, our website is www.thefolsongroup.com. That's TheFolsonGroup.com. I say that like that because we get Folsom, like the prison, all the time.
Folsom Prison Blues. I mean, it's like the great Johnny Cash song. And maybe you should buy that website anyway, just in case.
I think it's taken, but it's a good idea.
All right, friends, yeah. If you learned something, leave Tina a nice comment down here and give a thumbs up on the podcast. But all of her links and information are in the show notes for this episode, which you can access in the link right here and reach out to her to ask additional questions and also to think about how you can approach management of large scale properties in a smarter way. Tina, thank you so much for coming on the show and for giving us some really interesting insights.
Thank you so much, Lee. Thank you for having me.
All right, guys, make sure you subscribe for more. Turn on the bell so you don't miss an episode. Give us 5 stars. And most importantly, we'll see you next time. As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out, I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.